Hello, and welcome to the Tiger's Den. Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us on this episode 5, I believe, of our podcast. Or is it 4? I don't know. One or the other. But whatever episode it is, I hope it's a good episode. Well, I think it'll be a good episode at least. Continue. Thanks for everyone who has downloaded our podcast. I really do appreciate all the downloads. You know, please hit us up on our Twitter. I would love to hear from everyone who is listening. I try to tweet on there a little bit. I'm trying to get more and more into the Twitter world and tweeting a little bit more on that for different things that pop up, breaking news, things like that. So please just make sure to check us out at Tiger_podcast. And again, thank you for the downloads. Follow us on Twitter and let's get it on. Let's get to the show. First, we are going to be talking some LSU football. All right. So this week was not as busy, I don't think, as last week, you know, with all the hiring of the coordinators and whatnot, the coordinators, coaches, things like that. But it was a recruiting week. It was the end to kind of the recruiting season. The LSU did pick up, you know, a few more recruits. One of the big ones was Will Campbell, offensive tackle out of Neville. This kid is huge. He's 6'6". He's listed at 285. I'm hearing he's closer to 300. But to be a high school senior, and this is the 2022 class, so he's going to be a senior next year. But, I mean, to be that big is just, you know, awesome. And for LSU to get an offensive lineman of his caliber, that's something that we really haven't had in a while, to get somebody so highly ranked. He's the number 6 offensive tackle in America and the number 2 player in Louisiana. So to get an offensive lineman like that is really just big. You typically see a lot of linemen that are kind of ranked high in the recruiting rankings kind of lately, the past few years, kind of go to other schools, go to Alabama or Ohio State. But, you know, to be able to land him was really big for the Tigers. So LSU ended up with the number 4 recruiting class, according to 24/7 Sports. They have a point system that they kind of use, and it is the 5th highest point total in program history for LSU. So that's awesome. And it's the 3rd straight top 5 class for Coach O. So hats off to him, and hats off to his coaching staff and everybody that handles recruiting, especially when you look at last year. Last year obviously didn't go the way we wanted it to. The, you know, we ended up 500. We imposed a bowl ban on ourselves for some things that were going on in the program. So to be able to come off a season like that and still land a top 5 recruiting class is a really a major accomplishment. And I think it's something that's really overlooked a lot of times by people, to come off of so much controversy like that and to come off a 6-6 season, a COVID season, and be the number 4 recruiting class in the country is pretty amazing. We have 22 signees right now. There are 3 spots left open. They usually leave some spots open for graduate transfers that might become from other schools. And so that part of the recruiting is still ongoing. I think that from what I've heard from Coach O, you know, they're kind of looking in the linebacker area, kind of like they did with Jabril Cox last year, bringing someone in who's a graduate transfer who can play right away, you know, who's obviously played at another school for the past 3 or 4 years and can just jump in and start for the Tigers. So really looking forward to seeing who they get with that. You know, they had a press conference finally with the with Durante Jones, the new defensive coordinator. And, you know, honestly, from what I've heard and read, it was pretty impressive interviews or interview that he did, a press conference that he did. You know, one of the main things I kind of got out of what he was saying was, you know, the first thing they worry about is the player, as far as what players they want to bring in. Obviously, he has a certain type of player he wants to bring in, both physically and I would say mentally, you know, the type of player, character, guy they want. And then the second thing is they look at the system. So he's not bringing in people to specifically fit, you know, your 3-4, your 4-3. He's going to mix and match those systems, which we kind of talked about. It's going to be a hybrid system. And look, you know, if you're a defensive coordinator in 2021 and you're planning on being, you know, at the college level, you have to play a hybrid defense. You have to look at what the offense is giving you, kind of like the offense looks at what the defense gives you. You know, you got to be able to look at that and adjust. That's one of the big problems with Bo Pelini was he was stuck in that 4-3 mindset. I'm playing this 4-3, playing this 4-3. I'm not changing. This is what we're doing. But, you know, and that's why he's gone. And that's why he's kind of a dinosaur. I'd be surprised if anybody else hired him at a major college. So with Durante, he's going to get the players and then he's going to figure out his system. And like I said, it's not going to be a straight 3-4-4-3 because you got to mix and match. You really do. You got to mix and match and put your players in the best position to make plays. And that seems like what he's going to do. And one thing that I really liked was that he said, we are going to play with violence. Now, in football terms, that is awesome. In regular life, we know violence ain't the way. But in football, awesome to hear from a coach. I really hope that they are flying around next year, hitting people, tackling people. And look, when you hit people, you know, obviously you want to do it the right way. You want to do it the fundamental way. You don't want to do it where you're going to get targeting and get kicked out of games. But hard hits can create turnovers. Hard hits can keep people from going over the middle on you because they're scared they're going to get rung up. The bringing the violence part was really appealing because I don't know that there were some parts last year where we had that. I'd say the last couple games where we were flying around and hit people. But you could see at the beginning of the season, it was almost like our brain, the players' brains were getting in their way. They were thinking too much instead of reacting to the ball. But I really think that Coach Jones will bring in this almost reactionary, we're going to, you know, call plays based on what the offense is running. And then we're going to flock to the ball and we're going to be violent when we hit, which was just, you know, what LSU really needs. They needed that youth, which we talked about. And with that youth, you can relate to the players better. You can give them your message better. They can learn the plays better. Look, if you've ever been in school, all of us have been in school. If you have a teacher that is a complete ass and you hate, you are less likely to learn from them, right? You are going to be stubborn. You're going to be bullheaded. I don't want to learn from this person. It makes it harder. It makes it harder for people to learn. When you have somebody who is better relate to your situation and your level, you know, with being like somebody, a younger person that can kind of get on your level, you're going to be more likely to listen to them because, hey, they know what I'm going through. They know what I've been through. They know where I need to be on the field. And it builds a trust with the coach and the player. And you need that. And I think Coach Jones and I think the other coaches, the linebacker, cornerback, safety coaches, all of them, defensive line coaches, all of them bring that youth to the defense. And it goes the same way on the offense. You brought in youth to be your offensive coordinator and your passing game coordinator. And I reserve the right to go back on this. I just want to let y'all know, but I hope, and I think it will bring some excitement, some, you know, offensively and defensively excitement, you know, to the games, to LSU's games. Now it might take a year, might take 2 years for it to fully be ingrained, but I really expect big things from LSU. You know, like we said before, they've got 20 of 22 starters coming back that were playing those last few games. LSU actually ranks number 30 in returning production in the country and number 2 in the SEC in returning production. I really expect them. They're going to have those skins on the wall from this past year. You know, we had the undefeated season. You go 6-6. Now it's time to bounce back up. You have to take that experience, take those lumps that you took last year and turn them into productivity this year. And I really and fully expect them to do that. I'll be very disappointed if they don't. And I'd be very surprised if they don't. I did say I reserve the right to go back on some of the stuff I'm saying now. But I really think that they have a great blueprint going for it. Now, everything looks good on paper. It's when you get on the field and do it, that's obviously when it counts. And injuries play a part of that as well. You know, last year, I really think could have been above 500 if Miles Brennan hadn't gotten hurt. Because you had to go through those few games with Finley at quarterback where he was kind of trying to figure things out. You had to simplify some stuff, you know, because, you know, he's a freshman. He's coming in. And then the same thing with Max Johnson. When he came in, you know, it took him a game or so to kind of get rolling with the system. You bring back Miles Brennan. He plays all year. I think that they would have been above 500, and I think they'll do well this year. We'll obviously get into a lot more once the season gets closer. One other note I wanted to add, Colin D'Angelo was named offensive analyst. He was the assistant director of player personnel for the Tigers, so he's been moved to offensive analyst. From what I understand, that's a really good move, and I'm very happy for him that he's getting to do that and become an analyst. And hopefully, I know he's done a good job with the recruiting. Obviously, we've had top five recruiting classes for the past 3 years, so hopefully he can bring that fire and enthusiasm. And again, he's a young guy, so you know, you can look at the youth two ways. You can look at it as excitement and bring in, you know, something to the table, or you can look at it as a negative. I'm choosing to look at it as a positive. So hopefully I don't eat my words later, but if I do, hey, I called it. I reserve the right to go back on everything I've said. I probably won't, but you never know. So I like to contradict myself quite a bit. Ask my wife, she'll tell you. Anyway, moving on, LSU basketball. All right. Where do I even start? Hey, let's start with some good news. I'll start with some good news for LSU basketball. And there isn't much. Believe me, there is not much good news. There is really only one thing of good news, and it's not even that great. Past game against Bama, which we'll get to a breakdown in a minute, Javonte Smart entered the 1,000-point club. So congratulations, Javonte. He is the 44th LSU Tiger to enter into the 1,000-point club. So hats off, Durante. Good job. Please, you know, keep it coming because we need it. And that's where we start with the bad stuff. So as we talked about last show, we had a really tough three-game stretch coming, right? We had Texas Tech, which is a top-10 team. We had Bama, another top-10 team. And then we had Florida. And Florida's always played us well. So in that tough stretch, we'd like to have gone 2-3. 3-0 would be awesome. 2-3 would be good, I take it. And your best chance you really had was against Texas Tech and then possibly against Florida because Bama's good. I mean, they're good. You saw what they did to us in the first time we played them. Then the Texas Tech game came. Wow. I don't know, for anybody who didn't hear, if you've been living under a rock, an LSU rock, because let's be face it, if you're a Tiger fan, you know what happened, okay? I don't need to give you a whole breakdown, but I'm gonna, but you should know what happened. LSU playing well, playing very well. Probably the best 39 minutes of a game that they've played all year, right? Defensively, looked great. Talked about them having to defend the perimeter better. Did a fantastic job for most of the game of defending the perimeter. Played well in the paint. Scored well. Was shooting well. Some 1 minute left in the game. LSU was up by 7. 1 minute left. Now, for those who know basketball, 1 minute can be an eternity. And for this game, it absolutely was an eternity. So 1 minute left in the game, LSU was up by 7. Texas Tech goes and scores 12 consecutive unanswered points to win the game. Yes, 12 unanswered points to win the game. How do you do that? You might ask, how can a team be down 7 points with a minute left and score 12 points unanswered to win the game? So this is how it happens. Texas Tech's got this really good guy, Mac McClung. Good shooter. Good guy. He really hadn't scored in the second half until that final minute. So he makes 2 3-pointers with a missed foul shot in between to bring Tech to within one. So LSU's still up at this point, 71-70, 31 seconds left. Watford, my boy Watford. Man, let me tell you something about Watford. Son, you need to change your hair back to the moose hair because the braids that you did, I don't know if you wound them too tight or what, but you ain't thinking, son. Goes to inbound the ball, gets it stolen, and they score again. So now Tech's up 72-71 with 27 seconds left. We go down. Cam Thomas misses a shot. Our friend Watford fouls on the rebound. They make their 2 free throws. Now they're up by 3. Tech's up by 3. And I'm going to get back to Cam Thomas in a minute when we get to the Alabama game. So don't go nowhere because I'm about to bust Cam Thomas's bubble. So then we get the ball back. Cam Thomas goes down, shoots another 3-pointer with 2 seconds left, misses, and that's pretty much the ball game. They score some more points. We lose 76 to 70. 76 to 71. 12 points in 1 minute. There are many ways to blow a game. Ask the Falcons, they'll tell you. But to be up 7 points with a minute left and let the other team score 12 consecutive points, unanswered points, is just it's demoralizing. It's unheard of. It's disgusting. It's horrible. It's whatever adjective you want to use, that's what it is. It's bad. Whatever bad adjective you want to use, that's what it is. And that game really hurt a lot to the team, I think, because they were playing so well the whole game. And when you play so well and you put up that much of an effort and you lose, it hurts. It really does. And, you know, I feel really bad for Javonte Smart in this game because he tied his career high of 29 points. I mean, the dude was on fire. He was on fire. Javonte Smart was on fire. And it's really, I felt really bad for him and ashamed for him because he was absolutely killing it this game. He was unbelievable. He was unbelievable. So as demoralizing as that loss was, we move on to Bama, the second game. So as I said before, you're kind of hoping you win Texas Tech, so maybe you can go 2-3. Because Bama, it's going to be a tough road. And we don't play well at Bama. I think we've won 9 games at Bama, LSU's entire basketball career. So we go to Bama on Wednesday. And pardon my French, but we play like dog shit. At the half, we were only down by 6. How that is possible, I don't know. And, you know, actually, I take that back. I do know why that was possible, because Alabama was not hitting shots. And that's the only reason why. Because if Alabama was hitting shots like they were in the first game, there's no way in hell we would have been only down by 6. Then we come out in the second half thinking, all right, we're down by 6. That's not bad. We got some momentum. Alabama goes on an 11-2 run to start the second half. 11-2. Kind of sounds like the game before with a 12-0 run within a minute. But this was an 11-2 run. There was a point where LSU went 1-for-17 in the second half. There was a stretch where they went 1-for-17. They went stone cold. They couldn't hit water if they fell out of a freaking boat. They did do better guarding the threes. I will give them that. like against Texas Tech, they did better guarding the threes, but they were giving up the lanes. They've got to find a way to be able to guard the paint and guard the three-point line. Other teams do it, but we can't. It's like one or the other. If we guard threes, we're giving up points in the paint. If we guard the paint, we're giving up threes. Not only are we giving up threes, we can't rebound the ball. Bama out-rebounded us 51-35. 51-35 out-rebounds. Now I'm going to get to Cam Thomas. I have preached about Cam Thomas on this show. I have said how good of a ball player he is, how good of a scorer he is. And he is a good scorer when he's on. Now, he still had 22 points in this game. But he was off most of the night. A lot of those 22 points were free throws. And he's a good free throw shooter. We were throwing balls up off the glass. Javonte Smart had a bad game. I mean, it was just an all-around crappy effort. But getting back to Cam Thomas, last game we won was against Texas A&M. In that game, Cam Thomas, who is a shooting guard, emphasis on the shooting, Cam Thomas had 4 assists that game. Against Tech, the game we lost, you know how many assists he had? 0. He had as many as I did. You know how many assists he had in the Bama game? 0. Again, as many as I had in that game. I'm all for shooting guard shooting. I get it. You're a shooting guard. You want to shoot. But you have got to take better shots. Better shot selection, I should say. And you got to rely on your teammates to help you get in those spots. They were not moving around on offense. They weren't moving around on defense. It looked like they gave up. And I don't know if the Texas Tech game just completely demoralized them. If that was the problem, I don't know. But suck it up, Buttercup. You're playing big boy basketball in the SEC. 0 assists in the 2 losses. He's just throwing up shots from damn near half court on some of these threes. It's ridiculous. LSU has length, somewhat. Not superior length, but some length to where they can get inside some. They need more length. I will say that. They need some more length. They need some taller guys, some bigger guys that can get in the paint. But some of the toss-ups we were throwing up, oh, my God. Like, if you ever seen the movie Along Came Polly, and there's a scene where Jack Black and Ben Stiller are shooting basketball. They're playing against these guys on a court. And Jack Black's just throwing up balls, you know, Kobe, and shooting the ball and just throwing it up, and it's hitting off the backboard, not even coming close. That's what they look like. That's exactly what they look like sometimes. I mean, balls were banging off the backboard. I'm going to be honest with you at this point. It looks like, it almost looks like they've given up. It really does. And they have the potential to go deep in the tournament. But potential only gets you so far. You have to take advantage of that potential. You have to use it to your advantage. And they're not. And I don't think at this point, watching them, unless something changes very quickly, they are not going to go far in the tournament. They might win one game. Might. At this point, I don't even know if they're going to get in the damn tournament the way they're playing. That's how bad it looks. Their overall record's good, 11-6. It's decent. But, man, they just keep losing games and games and games. And before you know it, they're going to be 500, and they're not going to make the tournament. Untapped potential. So it's the worst thing possible. Untapped potential. And that's what they're doing right now. So the Florida game was supposed to be tomorrow. And that was kind of the big three that we had talked about. That game has since been postponed due to COVID. Florida had some COVID issues with some of their players. So it's going to be postponed. I'll let you know, or whenever, pay attention to their Twitter and find out when they're going to reschedule. Their next game on the schedule will be Mississippi State on Wednesday. You know, I mean, it's a game they should win, but at this point, who the hell knows? Who the hell knows? I don't know what the hell they're doing. You know, you go from really looking good against A&M to just looking good again. You know, they look good against Texas Tech. I really think that last minute just demoralized them. I really do. At least that's the way they looked against Bama. But they better snap out of it quick. They better snap out of it quick. Because, you know, we're sitting here in February. I'm recording. It's February 5th. Next month's March. What's March known for? March Madness. NCAA tournament. I don't expect them to do much in the SEC tournament. I mean, I guess it depends on their draw. Bama's undefeated in the SEC. I would expect them to win the tournament at this point. Florida, maybe. But I don't think LSU has a chance to win an SEC tournament. I really don't. But they got to get it fixed quick. They really do. So that's my rant on LSU basketball. Just disappointing. Really disappointing. Moving on. LSU baseball. All right, so LSU baseball, we're not far away from the start of the LSU baseball season. Getting pretty excited, getting a little hyped. You know, really looking forward to seeing what this pitching staff can do. We know we've talked about that. I'm going to kind of, I guess, start, for those who aren't familiar with LSU baseball, I'm going to start kind of giving some previews of who I think or who their potential starters will be. You know, on the, not necessarily pitchers, but positional players. So I'm going to start kind of giving a little breakdown, a little insight onto what their lineups might look like. Now, I will tell you, I'm not in Baton Rouge, so I haven't been to any practices or anything. So a lot of this, of the info that I'm getting, I'm relying on just different people I trust on Twitter, sportscasters that I trust that have seen them practice. Also, there's a good baseball preview page on Tiger Droppings. So a lot of my info I'm kind of getting from there, at least until the season starts. And then I can kind of get a better grasp of what we're looking at. And like I said before, I think there'll be some surprises as far as, you know, who gets to start. I think there'll be some lineup switches here and there to kind of get the right group of guys on the field. You know, I really hope they do well. You know, I've made the statement that I don't think they'll win another championship under Mannary. And I still hold true to that. And like I said, I'll give you examples once the season starts of what I mean by that, of different coaching decisions that Mannary makes that really don't make a whole lot of sense to me, or, you know, to a lot of people. I'm not the only one that's going to be talking about it. There's going to be a lot of talking heads. And, you know, hindsight's 2020 and blah, blah, blah. But some of this stuff is basic baseball knowledge and information. And like I've said before, one of the things that drives me nuts is the lack of LSU base running, the how bad it is. Maybe they brought in somebody to help with that. I don't know. But we'll see. So, anyway, I'm going to start kind of breaking down a little bit some of the players, the expected lineup. I'm going to start kind of with the infield on this podcast, and we'll kind of go into the outfield and pitching later on. But on this particular one, we'll start with the infield. As I mentioned, I believe last week, Alex Malazzo will be starting at catcher. He's a sophomore, great arm, good defensive catcher, can throw a lot of people out. You know, he has elite, he's an elite catcher. He really is. Behind the plate, and I think he'll do good things back there. Batting wise, I'd say he's average. He's going to be more of a base hit kind of guy. I don't think he's going to be hitting with a lot of power, but that's okay. And it's kind of weird. So he started some last year. He'll be the first time LSU's returned a starting catcher in 4 years, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. So I'm looking forward to seeing him back there. Going on to first base, the projected starter will probably be Trey Morgan. Beloso started there last year, which we talked about, but he's going to be shifting to left field. So Trey Morgan will probably be starting. Like I said, he's a freshman. I believe he is out of New Orleans with Brother Martin. He's had some good early flashes. He I think will be good with the stick. He doesn't really have any kind of clearing holes defensively. He picks the ball pretty well. You know, and being at first base, you don't really have to field a lot of balls. It's more of picking balls. You know, you're not going to have feeling, but I think he'll have a really good glove at the position. He's a, you know, a decent speed, I'd say average to above average. He's not going to take plays off. He's going to hit well. So I think he's a really good prospect to be on the team and to start at first base. So that is Trey Morgan. Second base, you're looking at Cade Doty. He's pretty much a clear cut favorite to start at second. On a shortened 2020 season, he was kind of one of the players to watch. He's a good, very good defensive player. He played, you know, the season was shortened last year, but he did go on to play in a South Florida collegiate, you know, summer league. He hit with a 429 average, which is obviously really good. Not a great runner, but, you know, he likes to be kind of active on the base pads. He might get some stolen bases here or there. You know, he had a couple times the glove was an issue and defensively last year, but I think once he gets to second base and starts kind of getting into a groove of things, he will be very good defensively. At shortstop, you're looking at – well, so shortstop and third base is kind of going to be a toss-up. So you've got two guys. You get Collier Cranford and you've got Zach Arnold. Both are very good, can be good at short or third. I kind of think Collier Cranford will probably be the starter at short, although you might see some Zach Arnold in there. Zach Arnold probably has the most upside at the plate. He can really hit pretty well. You know, Collier Crawford was kind of an unexpected bright spot, but he is a bright spot. You know, he's very good defensively. He will, you know, make plays for you there. And, you know, at third, you kind of don't have to, it's a little less demanding than a shortstop position. Third base is, the ball gets to you quicker. You're not having to run around as much. It's pretty much balls hit the third. It's a bang, bang play. So shortstop, you got to be a little bit more athletic. And I think Crawford probably brings that to the table a little bit better than Zach Arnold. Both of them are sophomores. You know, kind of like I mentioned before, it's a young team. They are, you know, you could end up with more freshmen. You know, I got Trey Morgan starting at first as a freshman. The rest of the infield are sophomores, but you could end up with some more freshmen rotating in there. Like I said, I think that it's going to kind of be a plug-in play until Maneri kind of figures out what he wants to do. And sometimes you have to go with a hot hand, you know, at the plate or in the field. You know, if you got somebody making a bunch of errors on the field or not, you know, in a particular slump at the plate, you know, you might try to mix and match things. You know, the midweek games, they really kind of try to do that more than the SEC games on the weekend when they get into serious games. And, you know, there's enough games at the beginning of the season to try to iron these things out. So when SEC play starts, you should pretty much have your lineup set and be ready to go. One of the final polls came out, the USA Today poll. They were ranked number 9. So three of the top – we have three top 10, preseason rankings. between all the polls. So that's really good. We'll see how it goes. I'm very excited to get into it. Like I said, February 19th, they start against Air Force. And fingers crossed it's a good season. I don't see them winning a championship. Or, you know, maybe they'll make it to Omaha. I don't know. Get a regional, super regional would be nice. But I hope they perform. I really do. I don't like Mineri as a coach, but I hope the team performs. I hope these guys perform. And like I said, it's a young team. So if they aren't as well this year, hopefully next year they'll be a little better. But I really do expect them to do pretty decent this year, just not a championship. Well, I'm kind of on the baseball topic, and this is something I really haven't talked about yet this season. LSU softball is getting ready to start up too. Beth Torino, you know, last year it was a shortened season, kind of like baseball. They were playing very well. LSU typically has a really good softball team. Their facilities over there are really top notch. They have one of the best softball facilities in the country. They are ranked number 5 going into the season nationally, and they're picked to come in 2nd in the SEC behind Alabama. But Alabama seems to be just kicking our ass in everything, every sport. But anyway, so they ought to have a decent team. We had 4 preseason all SEC players, Shelby Wickersham, Ali Kilponen, Aaliyah Andrews, and Shelby Sinceri. So that's pretty good for you know, all SEC team preseason players. Look for them to do good things. We'll be, you know, I'll talk about them some, give you scores and updates. I probably won't go too much into in-depth into them unless, you know, we'll see. They might start winning and doing really well. And yeah, hey, they're picked to come in 5th. You know, they're ranked 5th, so they're not going to be, you know, they're going to be good. Should make the, you know, the College World Series. And, you know, when we get to the SEC tournament time and playoff, you know, World Series time, we'll hit them up more. So we're going to move on now to gymnastics. Not a lot to talk about, honestly, in gymnastics this week. They were supposed to go against Auburn last week. It got postponed because of COVID. It actually got moved to Friday, which is tonight, the 5th. They are at 6 o'clock on the SEC Network. Look, go check them out. You know, they're going to be good. They had back-to-back 197 scores. Kind of like I said on the last podcast, make sure you check out it. If you look at it at all, check out Reagan Campbell on beam and Sammy Durante on bars. Those two are just magnificent in those two aspects. And, you know, for that matter, I'd also would check out Haley Bryant. Check out Haley Bryant on the floor. She does very well too. So, and check her Haley Bryant out for the all around, but make sure you check out don't miss Reagan Campbell on the beam and Sammy Durante on bars. So, look for them, SEC Network, 6 o'clock Friday night. Go Tigers. Now, I do want to tease a little something, and I mentioned this a little bit last show. I do have an interview scheduled next week with an LSU gymnast. I am very excited to hopefully have her on the show. She's an amazing athlete and an amazing person. And we'll get more into that, you know, when I talk to her. I'm not going to tell you who it is yet, but it's going to be a really good interview. I don't want to say too much because I want to make sure that we're definitely. I have a time and date scheduled to do the interview. So knowing the person this she is, she'll be there and she'll show up. But I don't want to. I came to get down. So get down your sand, jump around. Once I do the jump interview, around. Follow me on Twitter. And I will give you an update of when I complete the interview. And then I'll tell you who it is. So I will announce it on Twitter. Next Wednesday, after I interview her, I will announce on Twitter who the interview is and probably when you can expect to hear it. So make sure you follow us on Twitter at Tiger underscore podcast at Tiger_podcast. Make sure you follow us on Twitter if you want to know who I will be interviewing next Wednesday. So I'll reveal it on Wednesday afternoon, and then the interview will probably post that week, or at least part of the interview. So make sure to check it out. It is going to be a good interview, I can promise you. So that is all the show we have for you right now. We want to thank our loyal listeners for downloading each week and for telling your friends about the Dome Patrol United Network, where you only have to subscribe to one feed to receive multiple podcasts, and it's free. You don't have to pay for our podcast. But we do have the 2-Point Conversion Instant Reaction Show after Saints games, the Dome Patrol podcast, the BS and Beer Saints podcast, the Pelican Plunge, the Premier League podcast, Taking the Over with Billy Gunn, which is our gambling podcast, and the Tiger's Den podcast, which you're listening to right now. Follow each show on Twitter at Dome Patrol PCast, at Dome Patrol UK, at BS and Beer Media, at Taking the Over, and of course, the Tiger's Den at Tiger_podcast. Also follow us on Facebook for live streams whenever we do them again. Just search for Dome Patrol Podcast. And if you want to listen to us the old-fashioned way, you can go to domepatrolpodcast.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you on the other side. Good night, Tiger Nation.